Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, which will focus on the June meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. The meeting took place in London from the 19th to the 21st of June 2018. My name is Matt Tilling and I'm the Director of Education here at the Foundation. Today I'm joined by Vice Chair Sue Lloyd to talk about the latest meeting and other developments. And for a change, we're on location at the IFRS conference in Frankfurt. That means things may sound a little bit different, and it also means that with everyone being tied up, Sue is the only one joining me today. So welcome, Sue, and tell us a little bit about Frankfurt.
Okay, so we're here in Frankfurt. We've got over 300 people at our conference, which is very pleasing, and we're covering a range of sessions on a whole range of topics at the conference, from making disclosures more meaningful and the importance of judgments and estimates, through to some more specific sessions on topics like implementing the leasing standard and also talking about the conceptual framework in action. And we've got a whole range of staff here and about a third of the board. And also, really importantly for the quality of the conference, we've got some great external speakers as well contributing to the sessions.
And it really is an international conference. I think we've got over 50 countries joining us here for this event. It's really fantastic to see. And one of the highlights, of course, was Hans's keynote, and we've put up his speech online if anyone is interested to see it, and also a recording of his speech as he delivered it.
One of the things he touches on, the title of his speech was IFRS Standards as Enlightened Self-Interest. I think he made some interesting observations on the benefits of using full IFRS standards, using some practical examples from different parts of the world and the different approaches they've taken to IFRS. And also, on a lighter note, there's quite an interesting discussion of the so-called Hathaway effect, where Hans talks about the effect of references to the actress Anne Hathaway on the Berkshire Hathaway share price. So some lighter notes, so I think it's worth listening to.
Before we go into the board's deliberations during the June meeting, the ISB has published a consultation on financial instruments with the characteristics of equity.
That's right. So this week we've published a discussion paper on this topic. And this paper focuses on the accounting for financial instruments from the perspective of the issuers of financial instruments. So basically it's talking about whether the instruments that an entity issues should be classified as debt or equity, or whether they should be classified as having different pieces that are debt and equity. And why have we published the discussion paper? Well, from a classification perspective, we know that today there's some lack of clarity about when some instruments should be classified as equity or when they should be classified as liabilities. And also, even when the classification outcomes are clear, sometimes today the reason for the classification outcomes isn't that clear. And so the paper develops a concept for classification, which we hope will provide more clarity and also mean that it's better for people as new instruments are developed to apply the principles to classification decisions. In addition, something we had heard in the past was that investors have said they want more detailed information to be provided about financial instruments in the financial statements, especially when financial instruments are classified as equity instruments. And that's because if you think about financial instruments, they can range all the way from short-term trade creditors right through to ordinary shares and every variant along the spectrum. And if all we've got to work with is a sort of black and white distinction between debt and equity, that can only ever tell you a little bit about the features of particular financial instruments. So just as importantly as the classification proposals in the discussion paper, the paper also includes some new proposals about presentation and disclosure that are really designed to sort of fill out the picture of the features of different financial instruments. So we hope that the discussion paper is helpful both for preparers and helping them understand classification, but also for investors, both by improving the consistency of the classification that different entities come up with, but also through these presentation and disclosure proposals. So it's a discussion paper, so it's open for consultation for 6 months until early January. And it's at the early stage of its life, this project. So what we'll do with the feedback is firstly determine whether or not people agree that there's actually enough of a problem with IAS 32 that it's worth proceeding with a standard setting project on the topic, and if there is enough support for proceeding with a project, whether or not people think that the ideas that we've got in the discussion paper warrant further development, or whether there's other ideas that we should explore. And so basically we'll be using the feedback from the comment letters and from our outreach to decide what the next step should be on the project.
This month, ahead of the main meeting, there was a joint FASB and ISB meeting, and this is an opportunity for the boards to share experiences and also look at matters around converged standards. Are there any particular highlights you think we should share?
Yeah, and firstly, I think it's probably useful to sort of give a little bit of background to the session and the nature of the session. So over the last few years, about once a year, we've held these joint sessions with the FASB, even though we no longer have joint projects with them, because we think it's good to share experiences and knowledge between the two boards. And so firstly, I think it's important to note that the meeting that we had was an education session, so neither board was asked to make decisions on any topics. It was very much educational in nature. So we really looked at two different types of topics. Firstly, we looked at projects where both boards have got the same or very similar projects that we're working on, and we really just wanted to update one another and exchange ideas. So one example of that was our primary financial statements project, where the FASB's got a related project they call financial performance reporting. So we had a discussion about the relationship between requiring further disaggregation on the face of the income statement, or defining subtotals on the face of the statement of financial performance. We also looked at our disclosure projects. We've both got disclosure projects ongoing. So both boards are looking at how disclosure requirements are developed and drafted, and we exchange thoughts there. And then the second type of discussion we had is in areas where we've already got converged standards, and we're sort of comparing notes to reduce the risk of us moving apart where we have convergence. So in that category, we discussed our fair value measurement, given we've got converged standards. We talked about what we'd heard in our recent post-implementation review, and the FASB updated us on the disclosure amendments that they've made that relate to fair value measurement. And we also talked about goodwill, given that we've got the same business combination standards, and we're both considering what, if anything, we should do about the subsequent accounting for goodwill. Unfortunately, no magic answer came out of the discussion, but it was interesting just to compare notes.
Turning now to the ISB meeting itself, consistent with the last few months, we started with the disclosure initiative. The board has outlined an approach to developing disclosure objectives and requirements in the future.
Yeah, that's right. So the staff put forward a proposal for an approach that we should take in the future to develop our disclosure requirements going forward. And I think importantly, the first thing that was agreed was that disclosure is something that we should always be thinking about earlier in the life of a project, sort of throughout its life rather than at the end of a project. And the other thing that we discussed with the staff was some proposed approaches to the steps we might take when we develop disclosure requirements. And we agreed that for the development of disclosure requirements, we should always ensure that we have a good understanding of what the issue is that we're trying to address. We should ensure that we have a good understanding of what stakeholders want from disclosures and why they want those things, both from preparers, but also very importantly from the users of the financial statements. How would they actually use the disclosures? Understanding what disclosures we'd need to support the particular recognition and measurement proposals that the board is developing. And throughout the project, considering the costs and the benefits of disclosure requirements so that it's not something we do at the end, but something we do on an ongoing basis. And then really understanding and documenting what the effects of the proposed disclosure objectives and requirements would be.
In addition to following this process, you will make sure that members of the taxonomy team will be attached to some projects.
Yeah, that's right. So what we agreed there was that the IFRS taxonomy team should be involved from an early stage in projects, and that we should routinely include them as part of our project teams, really for a couple of reasons. One is that of anybody in the building, I think the taxonomy team have got the best overview of all of the disclosure requirements, so they're most likely to pick up where we might have gaps or duplications. Also, they've got a very good idea of the disclosure that's going on in practice, so they can give us input from that perspective. Plus, because they have to take our disclosure requirements and then put them into the taxonomy, they've got a very good picture on the clarity of the drafting of our disclosure requirements. And it makes us be aware of the sort of digital world in which we are working. So the fact that they'll be thinking about tagging, but also how data is actually consumed, means that they can make sure we don't lose sight of that as well when we're drafting new disclosure requirements. So really, they've got a really broad and relevant skill set for many aspects of what we need to think about when we develop disclosure requirements.
And the board continues to discuss the definition of material. What's the latest there?
So this month we decided to include the concept of obscuring information in the actual definition of material. So that was in line with the proposals that we put out in our exposure draft. However, some, when they responded, even though they agreed with including the concept of obscuring, made the observation that it wasn't always clear what we meant by obscuring and that it could be quite judgmental. So in response to that feedback, what we will do in the final version of the changes is to provide a clearer description and examples of what we mean by obscuring. So we decided to sort of proceed and move forward with the project on the basis of making that amendment to the definition. We also decided to align the definition of material with the terminology we use in the conceptual framework, and also to replace the term could influence with could reasonably be expected to influence in the definition of material, which really elevates something already in our literature up in the requirements. The board also decided that the new definition would come into effect from the 1st of January 2020 with early application permitted.
The ISB continued from its April and May meetings the discussion of current value approaches for business combinations under common control that affect non-controlling shareholders.
Yeah, so this is the topic of business combinations under common control, so situations where the ultimate controller of a group of companies doesn't change, but for example, one sister company might acquire another, currently scoped out of IFRS 3. And again, we were looking at circumstances where the company making the acquisition, to use a loose term, has got non-controlling shareholders. It wasn't a decision-making meeting, it was more a discussion to give direction for the staff to develop their future thinking. And we were really, the staff was really looking for feedback from the board on whether it's the case that we need to routinely consider whether there's contributions of equity or distributions of equity if the company that buys its sister company is paying more or less than the fair value of the business that they're acquiring. Do we need to be hunting for that more than, you know, which we wouldn't do in a third-party business combination? And also more generally discussing, if we apply a current value approach based on IFRS 3, to what extent should we actually be making modifications just from the standard approach in IFRS 3? And I think that there was a little bit of a message from the board at this meeting to the staff, sort of warning against making it unduly complicated and whether or not we should stop and think a little harder about whether, in some cases, some additional disclosure on top of the normal IFRS 3 mechanics might be the best way forward. So I personally will be very interested to see what the staff come back with for us to talk about as they further develop the feedback.
Another topic this month, and one we've really only touched on briefly in the past, dynamic risk management. But this month it felt like some really key decisions were made by the board, and the ISB discussed a range of topics, including derivative financial instruments that will be addressed in the first phase of the DRM project.
So you're telling me, Matt, I can't get away with saying listen to the board meeting?
I think this month we might try and do a little bit more.
All right. So to recap then, so this project's all really about, it's really about interest rate risk management by banks, which I think is colloquially called macro hedging. Mm-hmm. And so the basic issue that we're trying to address is the mismatch between hedging assets and liabilities that are measured at amortized cost using derivatives that are measured at fair value. And what do we do about the mismatch that's created, and how do we best reflect that risk management activity in the financial statements? And so what the board has been discussing is a model that we plan to go out and test the idea before we work it up in full early next year. And what the board's been doing is building really on cash flow hedge accounting mechanics as a basis for the model. So what does that all mean for derivatives? So as you say, this month we talked about which derivatives would be the ones that would be eligible to be included in the model, so where the fair value changes would sit in other comprehensive income using cash flow hedge accounting mechanics. And the board decided tentatively that the model should permit the use of interest rate swaps, including basis swaps and forward starting swaps, in addition to forward rate agreements, but that at this stage we wouldn't consider including options because it makes the model more complex, but also they're less commonly used. We also decided that the model should require formal designation and documentation of the derivatives that are sort of designated as being part of the model that would be applied. And also, importantly, the board tentatively decided that only derivatives where there is an external counterparty would be eligible to be designated as part of the model.
And you also looked at financial performance in the context of the DRM accounting model.
So this month the board also started talking about how the performance reporting would work for the model that we've been developing. And just to go back a step, the whole idea of what we're looking at is building on the concept that from the bank's perspective, the hedging activities that they're undertaking really have an objective of trying to achieve a particular net interest margin outcome. So given the assets and the liabilities that they hold, they choose a set of derivatives to achieve a particular net interest margin outcome. So for example, to ensure that their net interest margin would be unaffected by changes in interest rates over the next 5 years, for argument's sake, so that they lock in, say, the spread between the assets and liabilities, taking into account the derivatives. So the basic idea that the board agreed to was that if an entity has entered into exactly the derivatives they need to enter into to achieve that objective, that what would be reflected in the income statement would be the net interest margin that they had been hoping to achieve, because that's exactly what they've managed given they've entered into the right derivatives. So that would mean that the sort of transformational effect of the risk management activities would be reflected in profit or loss. And that would be achieved using cash flow hedge accounting mechanics, which would mean that the derivatives that are part of the model would be deferred in OCI, and by recycling, this target net interest margin would be what you'd be seeing in the income statement. Now, the million-dollar question is what happens if you don't achieve the exactly perfect hedging strategy for some reason, and that will be the subject of future board discussions. You glad you asked?
I'm glad I asked. No, it's good. It's good to hear more about that project, and we'll look forward to seeing how that develops over the coming months. It's hard to believe, Sue. We celebrated IFRS 17's first birthday last month.
Oh, we did. And so on IFRS 17, we're pleased that from all the discussions we're having with people, it seems that people are really working hard on implementing the standard and really focusing on the details, and that's reflected in the fact that we're getting a good number of questions coming to the Transition Resource Group. We're also really pleased that many jurisdictions have already endorsed the standard around the world. And as we've mentioned in podcasts before, we're really trying to work hard from our side, providing the support that companies in the market needs to get ready for the standard with the Transition Resource Group, but also educational activities with investors. But we did have a discussion about the IFRS 17 at the board meeting, and what we were talking about was minor clarifying amendments to the standards, which I think we can compare to sort of small software bug fixes or housekeeping. So they are some amendments to the standard to fix some inconsistencies in drafting, for example, so nothing fundamental. And the board agreed that we should, sort of as responsible standard setters, make those changes. And given their nature, it was agreed by the board that these should be considered to be annual improvements, so part of our routine maintenance and housekeeping. So the initial thinking is that we'll include these proposed changes in the bundle of other annual improvements that next go out, and we'll just continue to monitor the timing of that.
And anyone particularly interested in seeing what those amendments look like can find them online as part of the agenda papers.
Absolutely.
Well, that brings us to the end of the June podcast. Thank you, Sue, for that solo effort. And I'd also like to thank our listeners. Any feedback on these podcasts, we always appreciate them. Please email us at communications@ifrs.org. As always, the full summary of the board's discussion and decisions at its June meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's website. Look forward to talking to you all again soon.